Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Today is Horticulture Day. I'm Charity Nebbe. Apple trees burst into bloom this week, and even though harvest is months away, this is the season of hope and optimism. It's also a good time to make a plan for how you want to care for your apple trees this season. Suzanne Slack is an assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University, and she is here to help us make a plan. Hello, Suzanne.
Hi, thanks for having me on today.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And like I said, trees just burst into bloom across most of the state this week. And let's start with those blossoms, because a proliferation of blossoms seems like a wonderful thing. But can there be too much of a good thing?
Yes and no. So typically for apples, we expect, you know, bloom to take about anywhere from 1 to 2 weeks per tree. The first flower that opens up is typically called the king bloom. And then the secondary flower, tertiary flower, and most apple clusters and cultivars have 5 to 6 flowers. So since they all kind of went all at once, it is a little bit of a problem for pollination. So thinning might be something we need to consider a little more this year than usual, because since they were all out at the same time, they all probably got pollinated a little more evenly.
Okay. And I know that thinning is really hard for people to do because we're so excited to see all of those blossoms. But why might it be important?
Well, there's two main reasons. One, you can think about it in a logistic sense. If there's a lot of apples, all of those nutrients are being spread over a larger amount of fruit. So if you want bigger, better, tastier, sugar-free, like more sugar, more sweet apples, you want less apples on your tree because the tree can then put more energy into those smaller number of apples. Then the second reason is a lot of the cultivars we grow in Iowa have this condition called biennial bearing. And if there's too many apples on the tree one year, the next year the apple tree won't put as many blossoms out or may not even flower at all. And once the tree goes into that biennial bearing system, it's really hard to basically trick them into blooming every year again.
All right. Well, and I've even seen apple trees with branches broken with too much fruit set on the trees. So, I mean, that can be a problem too, right? Just the weight of all of that fruit.
Oh, yeah, that's true. If you're not, if you're doing a low pruning or low maintenance training method on your tree and you get too much weight, they'll definitely break.
Low maintenance or complete neglect. I think that a lot of us have probably been in that situation. All right. Well, let's talk about then how you thin. What do you do to make sure that you've got the right amount of blossoms?
Well, the best thing you can do is around the end of June. There's something called June drop. So a lot of times the apples will try to thin themselves naturally, but they don't do a great job. And what you'd want to do is go out and remove fruit off of the clusters. So there's only about 1 or 2 fruit per cluster. And then try to space them out a little bit. Typically, I would recommend about 8 inches between the clusters. So just pick the ones that look the prettiest or the best, biggest, and everything else can go.
Now, Iowa has a climate that works pretty well for apple trees. It has the environment that works pretty well for apple trees, but they are really prone to diseases and pests. So let's focus on diseases first. What kind of diseases can cause problems for your apple trees?
Well, the one that we want to be really concerned about this year is fire blight. So fire blight is a bacterial disease of apples, and its first target on the apple tree are the flowers, and it likes warm weather and warm nights, which we just experienced a bunch of with all of those open flowers. So that's the main one to be concerned for.
All right. And if we're worried about fire blight, what are the first signs?
So you'll start to see some blackening of the flower tissue and some wilting. The flowers won't fall off. They'll stay on. They'll be black. You'll also see a bunch of or a lot of orange occurring, especially on the foliage nearby. And the telltale sign is what we call a shepherd's crook. So all of the shoots that are growing near that infected cluster will start to droop over and literally look like a shepherd's crook. They turn orangish and all of the leaves stay on. Also, you'll see some sticky substance called ooze. And that ooze is what is actually a matrix of that actual bacteria that causes the disease. And it can spread from blossom to blossom, shoot to shoot.
Is there a way to prevent fire blight?
So unfortunately, we're a little bit late this year, but for those who experience problems with it this year, there are some sprays, some chemical sprays that you can put on earlier when the flowers first come out, whenever they first open. About this time, it's a little late for anything for homeowners to really do except for to cut it out when they see it.
Okay, so if you see the signs, you should cut it out. And by cutting it out, what exactly does that mean?
So that means you want to use pruners, and you want to cut out all of the tissue. So that's all the shoots, as far down as you can get, about 6 to 8 inches below where you actually see the disease tissue occur. The bacteria has already traveled that far down without causing any signs or symptoms.
And if fire blight takes control, what happens to the tree?
The tree will die. So it will kill the tree. The other thing to mention too, when you do cut it out using your pruners, make sure you clean your pruners between each cut. It only takes, doesn't take very much of that bacteria to accidentally spread it throughout your tree. And then the bacteria can also live on your pruners for quite a bit of time.
Well, that has to be the most horrible disease that we're going to talk about. But are there other diseases that we should also be on the lookout for?
That's the worst one, but I liked mentioning it because it's the deadly one. Apple scab is also starting to come out. So the spores are already flying. This disease causes scabby-like lesions on the fruit as well as the leaves. And what we can do is spray different types of fungicides. For this one, too, if you are in an area that seems to have a lot of it, there are cultivars that are resistant to apple scab.
All right. And if you see apple scab, is there anything you can do?
There are some sprays, some chemical controls that you can do. This one won't necessarily kill your tree, but it will make your apples a little ugly. So it's safe to eat.
All right. And should we move on to pests, or are there more diseases we should talk about first?
There's one more.
Okay.
Powdery mildew is also a problem this time of year, or starts becoming a problem. It literally looks like someone dipped the tips of your shoots in a white powder. And there are some fungicide sprays that we can do. Some people cut it out. It causes just some deformations on those growing tips, and it can reduce overall vigor of your tree.
All right. So moving on to pests, what do we need to watch for?
So right now, we need to start thinking about Plum Cuculio, which is a little black insect that what it tries to do in apples is it's trying to lay its eggs unsuccessfully in the apple fruit. For those who've seen it before, it kind of looks like a half moon scar-like structure on their apples. It's very unsightly, basically. But the real problem with it is, while it's trying to affect your apples, if you have any other stone fruits nearby, those populations will actually cause your stone fruits to fall off. So they are successful in laying their eggs in stone fruits, the trees that are stone fruits. So that's a plum, peach, cherry. They don't like it, and they will drop their fruit.
Okay. So that could be an even worse problem for neighboring trees than it is for your apple trees. What are some of the other pests that might be around?
So we also have to think about apple maggot. So people aren't really too fond of having worms in their apples. So that one will start to emerge and start laying its eggs too in the developing fruit. For that one, there's also some insecticides that we can use.
All right. And that is the big question that a lot of people are faced with apple trees, is do I just take my chances and know that I'm probably not going to be able to store a lot of this fruit because it's going to have blemishes, or do I spray? So if somebody wants to take the spray route, if they're hoping to have fruit that is not blemished, what do they need to be doing?
They need to be spraying their trees once a week for the entire summer, which is a big ask, because we're talking about just some pests right now. But as the season continues, there's more. But there are a number of different spray regimes that are available for home gardeners who really want to have really nice fruit in their backyard. So typically for the fungicides, there's a couple of options for homeowners. There's Captan or Mancozeb, and those are great for apple scab and some of the other fungal diseases. Then for Plum Cuculio, we have Carbamyl, Malathion, and a couple of others that are registered for use. Organic-wise, there are a couple of other more expensive compounds, and one that I am really fond of is called Surround, which homeowners can purchase. and it is a kaolin clay. And what it does is kaolin clay is basically the inactive ingredient in toothpaste. So you're basically spraying your trees in like a powdered form of toothpaste. And it binds up all of those biting, chewing mouth parts of the insects. So it doesn't hurt beneficials at all. It only hurts things that are trying to eat your trees.
And with Surround, I'm familiar with seeing the product in use. How often do you have to put it on your trees?
Every time it rains. It doesn't have any sticking ability. So that's something that can be a little difficult. Also, if you are going the Surround route, you need to buy a specific sprayer that can keep it emulsified. So they're a little more expensive because what'll happen is if it's not constantly stirring or you're not constantly shaking it, it'll clog up your nozzles because it is clay.
And with Surround, I mean, that sounds like a pretty expensive option. It also sounds like the kind of thing, I do know that there are large scale organic orchards that use it, but it sounds like something that is more within reach of a home gardener who may have just a couple of trees.
Depends on how nice they want their fruit to look. Also, the nice thing about Surround is there's a lot of other crops that you can put it on. So if you have a big garden with a lot of insect problems, especially getting into the summer, and we talk about Japanese beetles. Japanese beetles also do not like Surround. It gets in their mouth parts and they don't want to eat it. So it's an option if you have a lot of plants that you're trying to protect.
With just taking your chances, which I know a lot of people do, because this is labor intensive, it's expensive, and there are concerns about chemicals in the environment. Do you have any words of wisdom for people who just want to roll the dice?
Just make sure that you keep a clean environment, remove anything that looks diseased, and make sure that you do a good job fertilizing and pruning your trees.
All right. Suzanne Slack is an assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. For more gardening information and tips, please subscribe to our Garden Variety newsletter. You can find out more about that at iowapublicradio.org/garden. I'm Charity Nebbe.
Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com. Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Suzanne Slack, an assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University, and Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension horticulture specialist. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
And of course, you are welcome to join our conversation as well. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. That's 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.com. And before we dive into questions, Aaron, I want to talk about flowers because I was not exaggerating. Everything burst into bloom this week. It was so wild. That heat hit and suddenly the lilacs were blooming and the apple trees were blooming and the crab apples were blooming. And of course, the tulips were still blooming.
I still had daffodils blooming even.
Yeah, I had a few, although they wilted pretty fast in the heat. This is pretty unusual to have so many things in blossom at the same time, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's been kind of an unusual spring. You know, we got kind of a late start and everything kind of held in a holding pattern because it was so cool. And then, you know, it got warm so quickly. And all that stuff. I mean, red buds and crab apples and stuff that normally is maybe spaced out maybe a week or two apart all together this year. So it was quite a bang.
Yeah. Well, and it's been gorgeous to look at. I'm not gorgeous to spend time outside in really this week, but this isn't going to last very long, is it?
No, that's the one downside to this is, that heat really progresses flowers along pretty quickly. And many of these spring blooming plants, their flowers don't love in 90s. And so they're going to bloom and be done much sooner than they normally would have been if it would have been cooler.
All right. So we have to enjoy it while it lasts, although mm-hmm. we've got strong thunderstorms moving across the state today. So it may be gone by the time you get home today.
Yeah, it could be that. Yeah. Weather like that can really also impact bloom on, especially on trees and shrubs and some of those other things.
Well, and we still have the peonies to look forward to in a couple of weeks. So there are more beautiful, beautiful things to come. All right. Let's dive into some questions. Again, the number to call 866-780-9100. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And here's a question for you, Suzanne, from Rachel. She says, we planted 3 bare root columnar dwarf apple trees last spring. They are now 3 feet tall. One is a variety that only gets 2 feet wide. Our dog chewed the top off, and I'm worried it won't be able to generate a new leader and grow anymore. What are your thoughts?
That sounds awful. So
and surprising.
And surprising. I think it'll be okay. The tree wants to go, knows how high it wants to get. So there will eventually be a new leader that it will pick. Typically, whenever you remove that top bud, you'll have a couple of some plant hormones will react, and she'll be able to pick between a new leader within this year.
All right. But it's important to choose the new leader, right?
Yes. So she's going to, when I say that, she might have anywhere from 2 to 5 new shoots trying to decide that they want to be the new leader of that tree. So she has to pick which one to choose. If she doesn't, she'll end up with a little bush.
Okay. All right. So prune everything back and pick the one that looks like it's going to be the most successful leader, right?
Exactly.
All right. And then her second question is, she says, this spring we have 3 blossoms on 1 tree. Should we pinch these off or let them develop fruit?
That's a great question. So typically the first and second year that you get dwarf apple trees, you should pinch the flowers off because the tree will put too much energy into making those fruits instead of growing and filling in some space.
All right, but it's only 3 blossoms.
That's still a lot of new. I know. But it's she'll regret it if she doesn't later.
Okay. All right. That feels like that would be very painful to pinch off the only 3 blossoms on a tree. But okay. Sometimes you have to do hard things.
Exactly.
All right. Here's another question. I will be getting a 6-foot-tall privacy fence installed around my yard. At one corner, there is a large lilac bush. It is well established and doesn't produce a lot of blooms, but creates a lot of shade, so I'd like to keep it around. However, many branches are crossing the space where the fence will go, and I'll need to remove them. When would be the best time to remove the branches? The fence is probably going to be put up in mid to late June, so it has to be before then.
I mean, you really could remove those branches anytime. It doesn't sound like it's blooming very well anyway. The biggest challenge with removing branches on lilac kind of earlier in the season is that you reduce the number of flowers that could come out. Well, in this situation, you don't have a ton of flowers. It's not going to really negatively impact the health of the shrub. And in fact, actually removing some branches on a large mature lilac can help promote more growth from the base, which should bloom better in future years. So it may even be a beneficial thing long term for this shrub.
All right. And let's go to the phones. The number to call, 866-780-9100. Jeremy is on the line in Fort Madison. Hi, Jeremy.
Hello. I have a peach melba tree, and I planted it last year, and it's afflicted with something. The tips of the twigs look like they've been stuck in a fire. They're black, the tips are, but they look like they've been burnt, and the leaves are swelling, and they look really ugly, and they're getting, you know, like swollen and disfigured.
Did you say it was a peach tree?
Yes, it's a peach tree.
Okay. There's a couple of diseases that it could be. So it sounds like what you can do is you can either physically remove those leaves that are damaged. So the fungus that's attacking those leaves, if you touch the leaves, the spores are actually already there at this time of year. So it would be better to remove them now or to really hit it good with a Captan spray.
Okay.
All right. Jeremy, thanks a lot for the call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Karen is up next in Carlisle. Hi, Karen.
Hi, I have a question about sedum. I've got ground sedum that does real well in rocky areas and dry soil. And I wanted to put some in a planter and I didn't know if I should use some special soil rather than just regular potting soil or what I should do.
So a sedum like that would probably be fine in a typical potting soil. You could also purchase, especially if sedum is the only thing in the container, you could also purchase a succulent mix. They're usually just a little more sharply drained. They might contain a little bit of sand or more perlite in them so that they don't retain quite as much water, which the succulent sedum would really appreciate. But it would also grow in a regular potting soil as well. And these sedums look really nice in containers, kind of trailing over the side of the container. So it could be very nice.
And I normally use moisture control potting soil. Would that be the thing to use for something like this?
That is usually nice for a lot of the annuals that we grow. Sedum would probably, it's a pretty tough plant. It'd probably be okay. But if I had a choice, I definitely would skip that moisture retaining stuff if I could.
Okay, and just a regular potting soil would be okay if I didn't use a succulent mixture then.
Yep.
And I have one other question.
Sure.
And this is regarding a Kentucky coffee tree. Mm-hmm. We were thinking of putting one of those in our front yard. We don't want something that gives a lot of shade, but we want something that looks nice. And I read where some of them can have beans or pods on them.
Yeah.
And if those pods would fall off, are they poisonous like to dogs?
You know, I don't know offhand specifically for that species if it would be a problem for dogs. There are some members of that family that can cause problems with things like dogs. The best way to avoid the pods is to buy a named cultivar. There are a few varieties of Kentucky coffee tree. They usually have cute names related to coffee, like Espresso or Little Joe.
Oh, okay.
The named cultivars are always male selections because, in general, most folks don't want the pods. If you buy a named cultivar, you will not have pods.
Okay. And is that a good ornamental tree then?
Yes, it's a wonderful shade tree. It's a great replacement for folks who have had to remove an ash tree. They're similar in size and growth rate and all of that. They're a little more coarse in the winter. They have huge divided leaves. So the leaflets are small, but the leaves are really big. So when it loses its leaves in the fall, it has a really coarse branching pattern. So that looks a little different than your typical tree, but otherwise they're just a really lovely shade tree.
Oh. Well, we're planning to put it in our front yard. We lost a linden tree this spring, and we were going to not plant in the same area, of course, but fairly close to where that one was, and we were thinking of getting something different. We plant a lot of trees, and we try to have different varieties and try different things and not plant the same thing all the time. So
the hardest thing about Kentucky coffee tree is it looks a little bit like a hat rack when it's young. Very few branches. Not exactly the most attractive little tree, kind of an ugly duckling scenario. It will turn into a beautiful swan.
Karen, thanks so much for the call. And I will say that I did a search on the internet, and there seems to be consensus that the pods of a Kentucky coffee tree are toxic for dogs. So they
kind of suspected they would be.
Yeah, be very irritating to the lining of the GI tract. And since we've already heard of a dog eating the top of an apple tree, I guess it's definitely a risk. All right, here is an email question from Richard. Our beautiful Japanese maple has died in a 20-foot by 20-foot space right outside our front door. After we have it removed, what are our options to replace it? It's a good protected space, and we like ornamental trees.
Ooh, an ornamental tree for a protected space. I might suggest a few things that, the typical things we recommend are things like redbud, crabapple, serviceberry. Those are all very nice trees for Iowa. But if he's in a protected location, we can try some things that maybe you wouldn't typically grow. One of my favorites is flowering dogwood, especially there's a native flowering dogwood. And then there's also an Asian variety called Kusa dogwood. Kusa I really enjoy, and it has fewer disease problems than our native one. So that would be one I would look into. There are some other Japanese-like maples. They're usually sold as like Korean maples, they are pretty winter hardy and quite attractive. So you could try another one of those too.
All right. The number to call with your question is 866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Let's go back to the phones. Ron is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Ron.
Yeah.
What's your question?
Oh, my question is, I've got a cherry tree. I think it was supposed to be one of them small cherry trees. And I put it in a long time ago, and it blossoms every year, and it never makes cherries. What do you make of that?
Is it an ornamental cherry, or is it one that's intended to have fruit?
Well, if it's not supposed to have fruit, would it blossom like that?
Yeah, so some of the ornamental cherries will have beautiful flowers, and then they don't do a great job always of producing fruit. And then what little fruit they do produce is usually plucked off by birds pretty quickly. So you rarely run into a lot of fruit on the more ornamental varieties, the ones that are kind of selected and sold as something for beautiful spring bloom, but not for edible fruit. And so if it is one of those cultivars, that could explain why it might not be setting fruit. But
do you know if it is supposed to be setting fruit, is it supposed to be a sweet or a tart cherry?
You know, my wife ordered them out of from a company, and they were all supposed to be dwarfs. You know, small trees, I've got a dwarf apple tree, and then this one was supposed to be a dwarf cherry tree. I don't know. It was years ago when my boys were younger. They're all got their families now. This thing blooms out real pretty. You're right. I never thought about that. And I have a pear tree that has never made one pear. And there's another one. I'm not sure. I think it might be a plum tree. Has never made a plum. Last year, I thought I had pears. And they were little round things, sort of shaped like pears, but that's all the bigger they got. I don't know.
I'm tempted to
chop them down and start over.
It could be a couple of things. So sweet cherries are not self-fertile, and they need a different cultivar to make cherries occur. So they'll have flowers, but if there's not an adequate pollination source for them, they won't actually set fruit. Plums, I believe, are also similar, that you need two different cultivars to make have successful adequate pollination to actually get production. And so are pears.
Okay, so Everybody needs a partner. So it sounds like Bob should maybe double up and plant three more, or Ron should double up and plant three more, huh?
That sounds like it might be the case. If you only have room for one and you want a fruit tree, tart cherries are self-pollinating. That's a really good option.
All right, and they do tend to do really well in Iowa. I am one of those people who neglects my fruit trees, and we still get great tart cherry crops at least every other year. So anybody can make it happen. Ron, good luck. Thanks a lot for the call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Bob is on the line in Carlisle. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a question regarding a Japanese maple.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I have one that's I've been planting in my yard for a number of years. In the last several years, some of the branches leaf out, and then the leaves dry up and die off. And I waited this year. I didn't trim the branches out last year, so I waited this year to see what happened. And apparently those branches have leafed out again, but once again the leaves have died, so there must be some type of a virus or disease in that particular tree limb. Is that correct?
It could be. I would look kind of at the base of that stem where it originates and look specifically for some discoloration or even some sunken areas. That would be the sign of a canker or some kind of fungal disease that could be limiting the water and nutrient flow to those branches, which could cause them, you know, they have enough local energy maybe to produce some leaves, but then there's not enough to sustain, not enough kind of water flow to sustain them for the rest of the year. And so I would look for that. There are a couple that tend to cause problems with Japanese maple once in a while. And so that's where I would start. The other thing you can look at, you know, there are some Japanese maples that aren't as winter hardy. And so depending on where on the tree it is, it could be a tree that had some damage over winter. And it's not uncommon for trees who have winter damage to leaf out and then die back. And it kind of gives you this false sense that things actually made it through the winter. And in reality, it didn't happen that way. So that could also be it. I would start by looking for those signs of disease at the base of those branches and go from there.
I need to trim off those limbs that have.
Yeah, if you can trim them off, and like we talked about earlier with fire blight, if you can trim them off, you want to clean your tools with a 10% bleach solution between cuts and after cuts so you don't accidentally spread it.
All right, Bob, thanks a lot for the call. And that's pretty good advice with a lot of your gardening tools and your tomato cages and stuff like that, isn't it, Aaron?
Yeah, keeping them clean is always a good idea. Reuse when you reuse containers, same idea.
All right. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me, Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Suzanne Slack, an Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. You can join the conversation with your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
This IPR podcast is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including Above and Beyond Cancer.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Suzanne Slack, an assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University, and Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And let's go back to the phones. Linda is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Linda.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
All of our fruit trees have bloomed like crazy this spring, but I've not seen a whole lot of pollinators, and I wondered if this heat is going to cause any trouble in fruit being formed.
That's a great question. Suzanne, what do you think?
I am actually not a bee expert. I know that they don't like the super hot heat, but I would assume that in the cool mornings that we've been having, and it's been not super windy in the morning, there's probably been some pollinator activity. I'm interested to see what happens this year with the pollinator activity since there's so many options for them.
Right. Everything blooming at the same time. So the pollinators that are out there can take their pick, right?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Well, and Aaron, I'm thinking about this intense heat, and I know that it's intense for this time of year, but it really felt like July out there. Mm-hmm. And often in the summer, we talk about people who are having trouble with their tomatoes not pollinating in those periods of extreme heat. Is this the kind of thing that could apply to fruit trees in this very weird year?
Yeah, it could.
So I was actually just in a pear orchard yesterday, and I noticed a lot of stigma damage in pretty much every cultivar that was in there, and there was 17 cultivars. And I'm assuming it's from the heat. I've been monitoring the flower formation for about the past week. So I'm not really sure what that means yet, but I have seen some damage to floral organs.
Okay. And so the stigma, of course, that's in the center of the flower. That's very important. That receives the pollen, right?
Yes. Sorry. Yes. The stigma is where the pollination occurs. So the pollen hits the stigma and then the pollination occurs.
All right. So we are going to have to keep an eye on that this year. Sorry, that probably didn't set you at ease at all, Linda, or anybody else for that matter. All right, you can join the conversation with your call, 866-780-9100. Lisa is next in West Des Moines. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question about my sour cherry trees. I have three very well-established ones, and I've used the fertilizer spikes on them, and they opened up the other day. Everything blossomed at once. And I watered them, and I left the water on kind of long, so probably 6 hours, more than I intended. And about 4 years ago, my daughter graduated from high school. We had blossoms, and it was really hot that day, and I didn't get any crop, and someone said it was because of the heat. But I also know that lots of water can, overwatering can make them lose their blossoms. So the other day after the blossoms, it was just loaded. And now I don't see anything, and I don't know if I'm going to get a crop or not.
So When you say you don't see anything, do you mean did the petals fall off, or did the whole flower structure fall off?
Well, the petals, but I guess I just thought I would see some petals on the ground. They're all gone.
Well, so it got really hot, and we're already seeing some petal fall occurring because the flowers just went so quickly. And if those flowers get pollinated, it's a signal to them that they don't need to spend all that energy into their petals or other pollinator attractor mechanisms anymore. So I would just do a double check and go out and just look and see if you can see the little fruitlets forming underneath where the flowers were. And then if you don't, what you did, I don't think you did anything wrong. I think this might, if it occurs that you aren't getting flowers, or the flowers were, you know, aborted, then it was probably because of the heat.
All right, Lisa, thanks for the call. And some years are like that, hopefully. Hopefully everybody just already did their work. Let's go to Karen next in Ames. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
What's your question?
So my question is, I have a Honeycrisp dwarf tree. We had it for 5 years. The first year it had fruit. They told me to cut the fruit so the trunk could grow healthier and, you know, bigger. We have not seen a huge growth on it. It's just been maybe a couple of inches or so in the past 5 years, and no fruit.
So do you know what, do you know what rootstock it's on?
I don't.
Okay, so Honeycrisp, I was wondering if we get some questions on Honeycrisp. Honeycrisp are notoriously difficult to grow, even in a commercial setting. One thing I would recommend doing is really hitting it well with some calcium fertilizer this year. Honeycrisps are notoriously hard at acquiring calcium, so that might help with some of that growth you're seeing as far as a fertilizer regime. And then for flowers, Honeycrisps need a partner pollinator, but they're not very good at giving their pollen to others. So typically if you have Honeycrisp, you need at least two other cultivars nearby to get really good crops.
Mm-hmm. So crabapple trees wouldn't help?
They will if they come out at the same time. Like this year, they probably will because everything came out at the same time. But some years, they might not bloom at the same time. So just making sure that the flowers are out at the right time would be great.
What would be an easier apple tree to grow?
Oh, there's quite a few of them. So if you're looking for another red apple that's really easy to grow but might not be the tastiest option, is Liberty. There's also, for yellow apples, one of my favorite is Gold Rush. It's a very attractive fall yellow apple. There's also a yellow apple called Pristine. That's a earlier apple that's a very nice, really good for baking and fresh eating. Those are easier apples to grow, I think.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Karen. So many good options out there. How hard was that to narrow that down to a short list, Suzanne?
It was extremely hard. Someone asked me the other day what my five top ones were, so I kind of had them in mind. But I also really like yellow apples, so I'm a little biased.
All right, I love yellow apples, too. All right, let's go to Marty in Geneseo, Illinois. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
My question is, we have a small prairie, and on the edge of our prairie, we have several white pine trees. And unfortunately, this March, we burned our prairie, and the prairie got a little bit out of control, and we scorched a couple of our white pine trees. One of the white pine trees is showing new growth at the top, which is encouraging. All the needles are pliable. So my question is, what are the chances of the white pine tree surviving and the needles turning back green? The other pine tree, the needles are pliable, but no new growth yet, and it may be a goner. So how long should we wait for these trees to see if they're going to come back to life?
Yeah, if you're seeing new growth, that's a very good sign. The needles probably won't green back up again, but it will grow new needles. And the average age, needles on white pine only live about 3 years. So they would have dropped off in 3 years anyway. So the reason I bring that up is because typically when you see a lot of damage to something like white pine, in about 5 years, the tree, as long as the growing points didn't die and you see new growth forming, the tree generally looks fairly good after a handful of years, almost to the point where you might not even realize that it had that major stress event. Now, the tree that's not showing any growth yet, I would still wait. I would probably give it at least until midsummer before I decided that it was alive or not. But if you don't see any growth by midsummer, it's probably probably a goner. But the new growth is very encouraging.
Okay, that helps a lot. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call, Marty. Next up is Will in Wellman. Hi, Will.
Hi. My question today is, I wish you guys could discuss kind of the cedar trees that you guys see in ditches around here. Seems like everybody's always telling me their own little thing about them. They're tick magnets. They're native. They're invasive. I like them. I don't know if a lot of other people do, but I was wanting to hear more about them.
Oh, sure.
So those trees are the eastern red cedar. They're not a cedar at all. They're actually a juniper. They are the only conifer native to the entire state of Iowa. They do very well throughout our state. They don't garner a lot of positive reactions because they're really scrubby looking trees. So they're not terribly ornamental. They kind of brown up most winters too, which also isn't terribly ornamental. They can very easily reseed in areas that folks don't want them. So we hear a lot about people who are trying to establish prairies who fight against this species, people who have CRP acres that fight against this species, because it is so well adapted to Iowa. It's pretty much the only evergreen that's well adapted to Iowa. They are great options for especially farmstead windbreaks because they are so tolerant, and windbreaks don't necessarily have to have the most ornamental trees in them. So they make really good options for windbreaks. But yeah, they're a tough little tree. They can, because they're a juniper, I think they can serve as an alternate host for cedar apple rust. Right, Suzanne?
I have to actually look that up because I was, when you were talking, it's not a true cedar. So I'm not sure, but there is another summer disease on apples called cedar apple rust. And cedar's the primary host and apples are just the unfortunate alternative host. So it's actually worse on the cedars typically, but I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I will look
so
that up.
A lot of times we don't recommend that those trees get planted near fruit trees or remain near fruit trees. But otherwise, it feels invasive because it's so well adapted and it tends to grow in areas that are recently disturbed pretty easily. So we see it kind of popping up everywhere, but it is a native tree.
Well,
and a tough one.
A lot of people get frustrated with the ones in ditches because they grow under power lines, so they do have to get cut down. They smell amazing. It's a wonderful, wonderful
aroma. Yeah, they have
a
very distinct smell. And we actually used to use them as a Christmas tree. It's not a great Christmas tree. It's actually a terrible Christmas tree.
It works. Come
on.
But
it was a free Christmas tree. So,
I've done that.
That is an option, too. And it has that very distinct kind of piney evergreen smell.
Right. You want to wear gloves if you're handling them at all, though.
Yes.
But he asked about ticks, and they don't have any relationship with ticks, right?
Ticks, as far as I know, I mean, ticks, there's nothing special about these trees that's not special about any other plant that ticks might fall from on you.
All right. And the ticks are in the grasses. Ticks are all over the place.
Yep.
But they're not diving on you out of trees.
No.
All right. Let's go next to John in Jones County. Hi, John.
Hi there. I have a problem with worms in my apples when they're real small. And I think you called them maggots, maybe. And I wondered how soon after the blossoms I can start spraying and what's the best spray for that.
Oh, okay. So those are probably the apple maggots, and those flies, the adult flies, are probably out about now, or they'll be out fairly soon. And the best sprays, let's see. So for those, for a homeowner, I would say it's going to be, I'm actually not 100% sure. So some my background is more in the commercial setting, so I don't want to recommend something that you can't actually get. So let me look real quick.
And the timing of that spray would be very soon, correct?
Yes, typically fruit set. So
yeah.
So which is probably now to the next this weekend.
Mm-hmm. And
yeah, because I mean they're full of blossoms, but some of the petals are starting to fall. So can you start spraying right away, or should you wait till all the petals are off?
I would wait till all the petals are off because you might inadvertently get some pollinators with some of the homeowner-friendly sprays. So I think carbanyl will work. The malathion will also work. And then there's also spinorium is also says it can work against the apple maggot.
Yeah. And a lot of times those particular chemicals are part of what you'll find as a home orchard spray. So if you go to the garden center, if you find like a home orchard spray, it's a mix of a couple of fungicides, maybe one or two insecticides. It'll have the whole schedule outlined on the label. And that's usually the easiest thing for a homeowner to use. But yeah, definitely wait till full petal drop because you don't want to spray it if there are any bees around.
John, thanks a lot for your call, and we'll squeeze in a few email questions here. Here's one from Adrian in Des Moines. I have a lilac that appears to be quite old and is looking somewhat scraggly. It's about 9 to 10 feet tall, lots of old limbs that don't flower or leaf, some weird sucker stuff growing up next to it, but the limbs that do flower are full and lovely. When and how should I prune it to bring it back?
So immediately following bloom, you can prune it, and I would remove the oldest one or two branches very close to the base. This will do a couple of things. It will help kind of reduce the size of the shrub so you can get flowers closer to where you are. It will also maintain kind of the natural form of the shrub, where shearing would not do that. And it will encourage new growth at the base, which will bloom better than those really old stems. And then repeat this process for about 3 years, and you can completely revitalize or rejuvenate that shrub into something that will probably bloom better and be a little bit healthier.
All right, and we've got about a minute left. I've got a lightning round for you, Aaron. This question is, my red oak drops sticks and small limbs throughout the year. Is this normal, or should I be concerned?
It is, especially for a more mature tree, you're going to get sticks that shed out of the tree every once in a while. And squirrels cut off tips of branches sometimes, too.
So it's okay. Mm-hmm. Second question, now that my star magnolia has bloomed out, can I trim up the low-hanging branches?
Yes.
All right. And, there it is. How can one tell when a harvest of a 4-year-old asparagus patch should be terminated for the year? That's from Jim.
Usually we will stop harvest definitely by the end of May, first part of June. And if you're getting a lot of spears that are starting to get ferny, you can stop then.
All right. Would it be later this year, though?
Maybe. If it's this warm, though, probably not.
All right. And final one. Andrea says, I've read that improving the quality of your soil can actually help discourage weeds. Is this true? And can I use this strategy to fight back against my weed nemesis, bindweed?
Oh, I don't know. Not necessarily. The best tactic for weeds is going to be use a mulch to help prevent germination and to be persistent. Get it when it's small. Be out there all the time getting it.
All right. Pull, 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 and pull.
Yep. Every time you're in the garden, pull one.
Aaron's or 10. Yeah. Aaron Style, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Aaron Style, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Suzanne Slack, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you come back again. Suzanne Slack is an assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. For more gardening information and tips, please subscribe to our Garden Variety newsletter and our Garden Variety podcast. You can find out more at iowapublicradio.org/garden. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.